Brent is a college football analyst for First Coast News, co-host of the SEC and Helping Podcast, 1010 XL Radio, College Sports Notebook, so many different things. Brent, thank you for joining as always. How are you doing today?
Well, we have survived the draft, which we're glad to always do. The SEC did about as well as we thought they would do, did they not? So just an amazing performance in many ways. So we now settle down a little bit to, gosh, who knows? We've got a break now in the transfer portal, fortunately, although a lot of that's still going on, and NIL stuff's not stopping either. So, and the, on a better note, we've got magazines hopefully coming out. I don't know if they're going to be this month, but probably next month would be more like it with the roster management situation. So we will, well, we will see where all that goes.
Yeah, we definitely will. As of right now, Athlon's got June 7th up there. I think Lindy's was May 31st last I checked, but obviously, as you said last week, given all the chaos that has unfolded here over the last week or two, I mean, you're wanting to put in the final print. You know, you're wanting to have the deadline to be at a correct time to bring in the magazines in May, but I don't know if we're going to get there necessarily. And you speaking it. Speaking about it, Brent, the whole transfer thing is kind of crazy in itself. And then we got the NIL deal over the weekend that apparently, I don't even know, is Jordan Addison, is he actually in the portal from Pitt, or did he actually,
no,
or did he not go in?
Look, none of that's, from what I understand, none of that's really official yet. We're still kind of waiting where that goes. See, part of the issue that we've got here now is the deadline was yesterday, but the thing that we're seeing is that it actually is taking like in everything 3 or 4 days for the paperwork to come through, and then after that we will know more of what's official and what's not. So I think that's kind of what we're at this point, is just to wait on where a lot of this is going to be with him. So, but as far as the other situation is concerned, overall, May 1, the deadline, but if you entered in May 1, it's going to take 2 or 3 days for everything to work its way through the system.
Well, and I hate to pump the bad news in, but if this situation with Jordan Addison goes through and he's been associated with USC, Pat Narduzzi had called Lincoln Riley to make sure he mentioned his displeasure with this whole deal. But there's some level, it seems like, of tampering going on. Now, again, in tampering, if you look at the professional leagues, there's a relatively costly penalty there. Is there any way that the NCAA can, well, they'll obviously have to introduce something, I'm sure, but is there something that they can do now that would penalize Lincoln Riley for doing this in any sort of way if there was tampering going on? Or is this something that maybe even goes beyond Lincoln Riley and is being done by all kinds of different coaches throughout the SEC and throughout the country?
Well, it is, and that's what's happening. And frankly, right now, there really is no way to stop it. And that's where we are. I don't know right now if the NCAA wants to even try to do anything with this. The problem with the NCAA right now is they're trying to stay away from lawsuits, and they don't want to get involved with one. So that has some bearing on this, too. But to answer your question, no, I don't think that. Okay, the answer to your question is it tampering? Yes. Can they do anything about it? Probably right now. I think they may have some kind of I'll say this, whatever they've got, I don't know if it's worth the paper it's written on. In other words, I don't believe that they've got a situation where they can do anything about starting an investigation with Lincoln Riley, because if they started one tomorrow, Drew, we're in a situation where we both know probably nothing would come of it substantially until probably another, I would say, 12 to 18 months.
Well, and given the fact that Mark Emmert has announced he's going to be stepping down here, maybe it is best that they not even worry about it and try to get somebody in there who can resolve the situation better. I think a lot of people have probably some sense of joy that Mark Emmert is going to be stepping down. But who do you think would be a good replacement for him? Not necessarily a name, but as far as background is concerned, are you want somebody who is associated with the Board of Governors, a university president, or do you want somebody who has been involved with the athletic department? I know Oliver Luck's name has come up. He's been involved with name, image, and likeness in particular, so maybe he would know a little bit more about it. Is there any background that you think would be best for the NCAA to bring in as president?
You don't want a bureaucrat. Well, we've had too much of that. That's not going to help anybody. I think one of your best guys to do it is Nick Saban, but he's not going to do it. He's too smart for that. Condoleezza Rice's name has been mentioned. You mentioned Oliver Luck. He would be a good name to look at with that, too. A lot's been said about Greg Sankey. It's not going to be Greg. He doesn't want the job. And frankly, Sankey is in a situation right now to where he has more influence as the SEC commissioner than anybody. So the thing they really need to do, and I don't think they ever would, is they need to probably get a commissioner for football, for basketball, and then to get another one for, say, the Olympic sports, because it's just too unwieldy now to try to cover all these sports because you can't do it. I think Emmert had good intentions. I think he wanted to streamline a lot of the stuff. I think he wanted to cut the rule book in half, but he just could not do that. And because of that, we still remain with a very powerless organization. Drew, if the NCAA had really started about 5 years ago and gave student athletes some pocket money. Okay, we're going to give you some money to get your autograph given out. We're going to give you money to do a little bit of being a spokesman for Pete's Barbecue or something like that. They may have been very accommodating. May have accepted that and just went on with it, and it would have never grown to the monster that we're dealing with now.
And as you've said a couple of times since over the last few months, just we're still learning, and even going back to the fall of last year, we're still learning a whole lot about this thing. I mean, and it was going to take a little bit for us to figure things out, and I think that this is obviously. People want to freak out at this, I talk about it a lot. So, I mean, I freak out about it as well. But they're gonna figure it out, and hopefully, it's sooner rather than later. Because I think there may be a point where we get too far gone on this thing if nothing's come in. I feel like the one thing that has to be done is: do you feel like there is a that they have to hit on this hire? Like it cannot. They have to make sure that the person who comes in has a plan in place or has at least a good idea on who they want to involve, what they would like to do right from the get-go of when they come in to try to go through some of these changes that need to be done and some of the adjustments to the NIL and to the transfer portal that have to change things up?
Yes, to a degree, and that would help with the immediate, but Jack Schwarbrick of Notre Dame said last week that he thinks within 10 years that we're going to have a situation where we've got basically a top 64 or something of that nature, and they're going to do their own thing. So it would certainly help to see someone in order to try to rein some of this in. I think the NIL stuff, and Dennis Dodd has said this, I thought that this was interesting. He's tweeted out a couple of times that no one really is going to even be paying attention to this in a couple of years. And that's hard to believe, but that very well may be the case. And what that would mean would be that the reality is you would the economics would settle down and the market would take care of itself, and we don't understand exactly how that would be. Now, I tell you nothing that would happen, and I don't think they would put the toothpaste back in the tube, but the reality is if they took away the immediate eligibility situation, a lot of this stuff would come down immediately, frankly, because that's one thing that's really driving it right now is you can go on the portal after being somewhere for 3 years, and then after you go on the portal, you can be on another campus in a short period of time.
Right, yeah, and that is the big thing, as you said. If they change that, then maybe at least it'll calm down in that regard. Things will pipe down a little bit, and we talk about all the changes that need to be done. Maybe that's something that can just put a freeze on the transfer portal, and then they can figure out the other stuff before figuring out what exactly to do with it. I want to end with this.
Right.
So I'm sure that you saw this, but Ben Joyce broke the record for the fastest pitch in college baseball history. I had watched a video of it, and it almost looks faster, to be honest with you, than one of Aroldis Chapman's pitches where he was throwing 106, 107. And I don't know if that's because he's a right-hander or not, but my goodness, does he throw some serious heat.
Look, anything, it really makes you wonder where this could go one day. Are we going to be in 10, 20 years where we've got guys who are throwing, through 105 on a consistent basis or something of that nature? And at that point, does it get to the point where it's almost unfair and it's almost unhittable?
And I don't know if that – I feel like it might be a little bit – as far as the velocity coming off the bat, I don't know if it would be any different because of the aluminum or what have you as opposed to a wooden bat like in Major League Baseball. But somebody with that much heat, I mean, obviously, if you catch it right, that sucker's gone. But talk about the difficulty of a hitter. I mean, these guys are essentially as good as Major League pitchers, but they're still playing at the collegiate level. I mean, you look at Kamar Rocker – Not that he's in the bigs yet, but he had some MLB type of stuff when he was still at Vanderbilt.
He did. One of the best. No question. But I would also say that college baseball right now is probably I don't know if it's as popular as it's ever been, as much as it is. It certainly has the most attention that it ever has.
Mm. Yeah, and do you think that that's just from the way that it's been covered, or do you think that with more coverage over the course of Omaha or what have you, maybe more people are going out?
Well, I think what you're seeing is and I'm surprised the network didn't get more pushback on this, but on particularly on the 16th and the 23rd, instead of having SEC spring games in football, they basically just had softball and baseball. So, and I'm really surprised that they did not get more criticism for that, because that is, they could have done both. They could have had two or three spring football games, and then they could have had baseball and softball. So I think what we're seeing now is more coverage or more intended coverage for softball and baseball than we probably have ever seen. So, I like college baseball. I like college softball. Matter of fact, college softball is a better watch simply because it's a shorter game. Mm-hmm. So, but it would be very interesting to see where both these sports go in terms of popularity and television soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you. I love watching the College World Series for baseball and then the Softball World Series as well. I really enjoy it, and it's cool to hear some of the stories as well of, you know, the coaches and the players as well that go through. Of course, the unfortunate passing of Lauren Burnett, the player from James Madison as well. That team last year was a lot of fun to watch, Brent, in that Softball College World Series. They were a Cinderella story that we don't traditionally see too often in baseball or softball when it comes down to the final 8 or 16 teams. Well, Brent, I appreciate the time as always. You have a blessed week, and I'll talk to you on Monday of next week.
Okay, bud. Take care.